Hello and welcome to a Fire for Effect minicast with myself, Andy Brown, Dave Green.
Hi guys.
And Simon Hall from Mortem et Glorium. Welcome to the show, Simon.
Thank you. Delighted to be here. Thanks for talking to me.
No worries. So, in a nutshell, what is Mortem et Glorium?
Well, Mortem et Glorium, which stands for Death or Glory in Roman, is an ancient war game that allows you to play any army from Ramesses II in ancient Egypt right the way through to the Teutonic Knights before the origin of firearms. It's designed to be several things. It's a tabletop game with lots of figures, but with the same engine. It's a simplified board game in a box where you can play four armies out of a box.
Brilliant. So it's not dependent on any scale or anything like that? You can use your own figures?
Well, you can use whatever figures you like and whatever basing system you've got, as long as both players have the same one, in fact. The rules are actually quite neutral. Right. In fact, all measurement and movement is in base width, so if your base width for you guys is 30 millimeters and for me is 40 millimeters, it makes no difference.
Right. Brilliant. So what sets Mortem et Glorium apart from other ancients games like Fog or DBMM?
Well, there are a couple of things that I've strived to do which seem to be working. The first is, if you think of a war game, it's quite easy to spend a lot of time thinking about the mechanics and the consequences. And I've tried to make a game where most of your brain power goes into being a general, which is making the decisions what you do with your troops. And the working out the consequences is the easy bit. And that seems to work because I think 80% of people's brain power, as the test is saying, is on the game rather than the consequences. Okay. The second thing we've achieved, I think, is that the armies have huge character. So if you play a Hun, you feel like you're Attila leading Huns. They have a very distinct character. If you're playing the Egyptians, they do. If you're playing the Romans, they do. So armies that are often quite similar in a lot of games are actually very, very diverse. And the third thing is very fast move.
So can you explain the rough mechanics of Mortem et Glorium for us? So you've got some dice, you've got some cards on the table here.
Yeah, so you've noticed these interesting, colourful things on the table. We have a set of 10 dice, which are in colours that go black, white, green, yellow, red, in order of power, and we have a similar set of cards. Let me do the dice first. The dice are basically the mechanism for all shooting and fighting. So the dice, the black dice are the worst dice, so if you're not likely to do a lot of damage, you'll be rolling these. The red do a lot of damage. If you're very advantaged, in inverted commas, you'll be rolling these. So all you're doing when you're fighting with two bases against each other is rolling a dice each and seeing what happens. And you read the result directly off the dice. Actually, let me do it from the green dice. If you're exactly equal, you'll roll the green dice each, and the green dice has got the symbols on that matter. So one symbol on there is a skull. If you roll a skull against me, you kill my base. It's as simple as that. It's got a little symbol of a gladius and a lombardo on it. If you get that, you've wounded me. You get another one, you'll kill a base. S is for special effects. So some troops like Gauls or charging knights have something called shatter, which is quite exciting. And you have a blank which does nothing. So the basics of the system are very straightforward. If you are in a very weak position, so let's imagine you're some light infantry with javelins in the open, being charged by some Teutonic knights in full plate mail, waving their swords and lances, you'll get to roll a black dice. The black dice has got four blanks, one wound and one S. You're not going to do very much. The Teutons at least will be rolling one red one, which has got two skulls on it, three wounds and an S. And in fact, or more than likely, they'll be rolling the maximum of what we nickname the deadly double red.
Right.
And have a good chance of killing them twice over.
Right. So if you roll in the red dice, you know you're at least going to do, it's like a wound, which is like half a base. So.
Yeah, that's exactly a good spot, actually. If you look at the dice in some detail, in fact, if you've got a special effect, which the knights have, you can't fail to do something if you're rolling a red dice.
Yeah.
So that's exactly the basics of the mechanics, yes.
Brilliant. So how do the cards fit in? Because we've got some cards as well, which have just got plain colours on them.
Well, you'll see the cards have got exactly the same colours. And it's exactly the same principle. The black cards are the worst cards. The red cards are the best cards. And these actually do the same thing, but for all your decisions, all your moving of troops. So what you will have as a general is between two and five cards. Just grab a mix of one of every card. And those cards will pay for different types of moves, depending on how easy your troops are to manoeuvre. So Roman troops generally don't need anything more than a green card to do anything. So greens, yellows and reds will allow you to wheel, to move quickly, to turn, to do whatever you want to do. If you're leading tribal Gauls, you'll be able to go dead ahead with green cards. But if you want to do something clever, you'll need to spend a red one. So these are just the prices for doing the moves. And then there's a few little simple mechanisms bolted on top to allow the whole game to flourish and move at pace. So as a general, you might only have three cards and have two whites and a black and be a little stranded, unless you've got Romans, in which case you can still do something. Or you may be a Gaul and get very lucky and have two reds and a yellow, and your Gauls can start retiring backwards and hiding in woods and such things.
So I guess you draw cards at the start of your turn or something like that?
Exactly right. You draw a set of cards for the generals at the start of the turn, and what's really novel about it is you don't do everything.
Right.
You make a decision, your opponent makes a decision. You make a decision. So it creates a simultaneous movement game, which is very different to the I move everything, I shoot everything type of game that we've been useful for quite a few years.
There was a nice example. I did a demonstration game of this yesterday, and I made a decision to turn some Gauls round and prepare to charge in the rear. And it was Sir Simon suddenly decided that he didn't need to play the game anymore and pass command over to Richard
and let him deal with the consequences.
Yes, you noticed that. It was a good time to go back to Rome, I have to say. Yes. Charging past Gauls in a wood was risky, and so it proved. But there we go.
Yeah. So how are you finding this weekend at the Games Expo?
I think it's excellent. I think on many fronts it's excellent doing this, but I was here at the first one, at the small hotel in Edgbaston, very first one, and to look at what they've achieved now is just mind-blowing, and I tip my hat to them. I think it's fantastic. I mean, I go to Essen on a regular basis. This is increasingly look like a small version of Essen that's growing year on year. Yeah. It's fabulous. It really is fabulous. It's been a great weekend.
So other than Mortimer Glorium, are you playing anything else at the moment? Are you doing any other systems on the side to try and keep things fresh?
I play a bit of all sorts of things, if I'm honest, behind the scenes. In fact, I have to say, despite being a historical wargamer, we're doing a fair bit of In Her Majesty's Name, running around as werewolves and such things for fun. But I've been a game designer, effectively, since I was 12. So in my closet, I've got this ancient game, but a World War II game, another ancients game, an American Civil War game. And I'm giving it work on July the 31st to focus on developing war games.
Wow. Very exciting. Fantastic.
So what's your current hobby project at the moment then?
You mean other than this one? What's the one happening next?
Yeah. Well, yeah. What are you doing next? Are you painting up an army for this, or are you...
I'm starting to paint up and gather 10mm figures, because I've become rather attached to 10mm figures, which I do think is the nicest scale of all. But it does make me rather sad that I have tens of thousands of 15mm ones.
Yeah, we're big 15mm fans on this show, I'm afraid. Is Mortimer Glorium a tournament game? Do you see it as a tournament game? Is it designed for tournaments?
It's designed to be a game that's fast-moving and really good fun to play, with all the bits you need in it to make it a sophisticated tournament game. I mean, I am a tournament player, as some of you I'm sure know. I did DBM extensively. I won the IWF World Championship 3 times, so I am a tournament player. So it's been designed with all the rigour of tournament play in mind, but it's an extremely fast-moving version, and it's quite brutal and quite unforgiving, which is quite entertaining. I've tracked the battles that I've won when I've won big and destroyed the opposing army, and one thing I am enjoying is the fact that on average I've lost 15 bases when I've won.
Right.
So you really feel like you've been in a scrap.
So who's the better DBMM player, you or Hammy?
I think that's a question you should pose to Hammy.
Who's the better Mortimer Glorium player, you or Hammy?
Probably another question you should pass to Hammy. He's actually getting, I have to say, he's actually getting quite good at it, although I've probably still got the edge as the author at the moment.
You have to change some rules before it goes to print. So how is it coming out? Is it going to be a Kickstarter, or is it going to be retail, or how's it going to get released, and when is it going to get released?
Well, the big tabletop board game is coming out in July. So that'll be available from the wargamezone.org website, which is my website. You can get that directly from there. And will come as a box set with an A4 folder, the printed rules within it, the dice, the cards, and all the bits you need to play. And later in the year, probably I should select October, November, there will be this box set where you can play it straight out of the box and play it being Julius Caesar trying to create an empire. You've got a mini army of Romans, you've got an army of Gauls to conquer, you've got the Spartacus slave revolt to put down, and you've got the Parthians of the East to conquer.
So are there any plans to make miniatures for this, or are you going to rely on other manufacturers' miniatures?
Well, the way the game's been set up is actually in part to encourage people in the hobby. Yeah. So it's lowered the entry barrier for playing the game. I tried it at a school with quite a lot of lads between 10 and 13, they really like it. So I'd rather in the main rely on other miniatures than say to people, look, if you want to do this, go buy some figures, paint them up and stick them on bases. Yeah. It's the same game. Yeah. And we need to get more people in the hobby. I'm really passionate about that. I go to the war game clubs and look around and keep mentioning the grey hair. We can do it. Can do it.
Excellent. Well, Simon, thank you very much for your time. So people need to look out for it on Facebook, etc.
Yes, there's a Mortar McGlorian Facebook page already, so you can follow it there. You can follow the wargamezone.org to my website, and you'll start to see it at the wargame shows, starting at the Challenge in a few weeks' time, where we have a demo comp. The first live competition is at BritCon in August in Manchester,
right.
And you'll just see more and more of it from there. Watch this space.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Simon. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for dropping in.